Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That's what it's all about, right? I mean, how great would it be to wake up every morning and not get on that scale, not worry about what you're eating later or what you ate yesterday? How wonderful would it be to just wake up and think about what kind of day you're gonna have? Be amazing, right? And that is what I am here to help you do, because it is not what you are eating that is really the problem, it's what's eating at you. Now, if you want to join me today in the studio, the number here is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what's eating at you, what's weighing on you. So I really missed you guys last week. I got a flu shot on Tuesday, and it gave me like the flu for 24 hours. So I had to cancel my whole day on Wednesday, including the show. So it's really good to be back here today. And I want to share an email from one of our regular callers, Nicole. If you've listened in the last few months, you've heard Nicole call in on a regular basis. Now, unfortunately, she emailed me. She's taken a new job. She can't call in anymore. So instead, she wrote a question. And here's her question. She says, I've been sick and found out that when I am sick, I gain weight because I'm more hungry and I eat for energy. And I also cannot work out during the course of my cold. I know you said food is not the solution to being tired, so food should not be the solution to being sick either. Yes, that's so true, Nicole. She says, I don't know how to avoid this next time I'm sick. Any suggestions or tips or anything for me to understand this better and do it differently next time I'm sick? Well, Nicole, I'm going to answer your questions not in exact order, but let me start with working out. So here's the thing about eating and working out. First of all, exercise should be a celebration for what your body can do, not a punishment for eating. You don't have to earn your calories by working out. Your body needs calories just to keep healthy. So even though you're not working out when you're sick, and I hope you're not working out when you're sick, you still need calories to keep everything working. And that includes, by the way, carbs. There's this notion that carbs are bad, carbs are the devil, carbs must be avoided at all times. So not true. Here's what carbs do in addition to making energy. They regulate the amount of sugar circulating in your blood so that all your cells get the energy they need. They provide nutrients for the friendly bacteria in your intestinal tract that helps digest food. They assist in your body's absorption of calcium. They may also lower cholesterol levels and regulate blood pressure, especially when the carbs have dietary fiber in them. So carbs are good. Don't cut back on carbs, whether or not you've got a cold or you're sick. Remember, even if you're not exercising, you are still burning calories. A calorie is just a measure of energy. It's the amount of heat required to raise the temperature of a gram of water by 1 degree Celsius. That's all a calorie is. And your body uses this energy to function. You naturally burn calories through three actions: daily living, digesting food, that's one that most people don't realize, and physical activity. So the calorie amount used to simply survive, it's known as your resting energy expenditure, REE. And that is energy that you need for automatic functions. You need calories for breathing, to keep your heart beating, circulation, muscle repair. And guess what? Guess what? What percentage of your daily calories do you think that accounts for? Just keeping your body going, just staying alive. Any guesses? Anyone want to write in? If you guys are on Instagram, write in what you think that might be. because I think you're going to be surprised when I tell you that all of this accounts for about 70%, 70% of your daily calories. And that is so important. 70% of your daily calories come from just the automatic functions of living. Digesting food uses about 10% of the energy you use in a day. You burn calories just by digesting the food you eat. And the final portion of your calorie burn is physical activity, which is only about 20%. So physical activity includes all physical motion, from walking your dog to running a marathon. All of those burn calories in different amounts. But physical activity only accounts for about 20% of the calories you use up, which means that if you're sick and not exercising is not going to make that much of a difference. Okay, so hopefully, Nicole, you're feeling better, and hopefully this makes sense to you. It is possible to estimate how many calories you specifically need and could burn in a day if you want to get that precise. There are a bunch of mathematical formulas, and I think you need a PhD in math. No, I'm only slightly exaggerating, but they're complicated. You need to know the percentage of lean body mass you have, and it's a bunch of numbers. It's a bunch of equations. Or you could go to the online to the USDA site, and they have a chart that basically says, hey, if you weigh this, if you're a woman or a man and you are this tall, here's your weight range, and that will give you and how many calories that you need. So that can help. So, like, for example, here I wrote down some of them, and they're averages. So, for example, a man who's an average of 5'10", weighing 164 pounds. The average woman is 5'4" and weighs 126 pounds. And then they say, like, how many calories you need, whether you are sedentary, moderately active, or active. By the way, what is sedentary? That means your only quote unquote exercise is walking to and from your car, or standing up in your kitchen and walking around as you're making dinner. That's sedentary. Moderately active is you have daily movement equal to 1.5 to 3 miles a day, which, if you guys have a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or something that tracks your steps, you know, that's pretty easy to achieve. It's pretty easy to walk, just walk around 1.5 to 3 miles a day. And active is physical activity that's equal to walking more than 3 miles a day. And so here are some average calorie burns, just so you guys know. So the average daily calorie burn for a man between the ages of 31 and 50, very random, but there you have it, is 2,200 to 2,400 if he's sedentary, 2,400 to 2,600 if he's moderately active, and 2,800 to 3,000 if he's active. For a sedentary woman, also between the ages of 31 and 50, but I'm not sure it matters all that much, the average calorie burn is 1,800 calories a day. For moderately active women, it's 2,000 calories, and for active women, it's 2,200 calories a day. And you'll notice that's actually not that much of a difference. You know, I remember I did a breast cancer walk a year and a half ago, the Avon walk, walked 39 miles in 3 days. Oh my God, my feet are still not the same. But on one day, we walked something like 27 miles. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, 27 miles. I must have burned like 10,000 calories. And I look at my Fitbit and it says, like, you've walked 67,000 steps today and your calorie burn is $4,600. Steps. And your calories were only whatever. So as you can see, even walking 30 miles in a day, it doubled my basic calories, but not by that much. So even if you're working out, it really doesn't account for that much. Most of weight loss has to do with eating. And if you eat too little, then your body goes into that mode where it says, whoa, you know, slow down, become more efficient. And it slows down, and then you need fewer calories just to keep your heart beating and your blood flowing. So that is something really important to keep in mind. Now, also, younger people tend to burn more calories. Older people tend to burn fewer calories. But it's very individual. So Nicole, if you're doing nothing at all but lie in bed all day while you are sick, you need those calories just to maintain the function of your body. And getting back to Nicole's question, I was also happy to read that she was reflecting about whether or not food was a solution to being sick. She said, food is not a solution to being tired. So true. So food should not be the solution to being sick either. So let's look at the whole feed a cold, starve a fever maxim. Is it true or not true? So there's an article in Scientific American called Fact or Fiction, Feed a Cold, Starve a Fever. Maxims typically date back many years, but feed a cold, starve a fever may beat them all. This saying has been traced to an entry in a dictionary in the year 1574. And this man, John Withels, noted, fasting is a great remedy of fever. The belief was that eating food can help the body generate warmth during a cold, and that avoiding food may help it cool down while overheated. But medical science says actually that is wrong. It should be feed a cold, feed a fever. Let's take colds first. And this is, you know, it's about to be the height of flu season and cold season. So I hope you guys stay healthy and you don't get sick. But if you do, this is something to keep in mind because a lot of people ask me this. Let's take colds first. When your body fights an illness, it needs energy. So eating healthy food is very helpful. Eating can also help your body generate heat, although so can, you know, wearing extra clothes or putting a blanket around you. The reasons to eat for fever are more interesting. So fever is part of the immune system's attempt to beat the bugs. It raises body temperature, which increases your metabolism. It results in more calories burned. For each degree of temperature rise, you're burning more calories. So taking in calories when you have a fever is actually important. And what about some of the common misconceptions or conceptions or ideas for beating colds and fevers, like, for example, eating chicken soup? Well, chicken soup doesn't possess any magic ingredients, although my grandmother would have disagreed. She called it Jewish penicillin. But it has calories. It also has all-important liquids. So there you have it, Nicole. Food will not make you wake up when you're tired. It won't help you get over a cold. But you do need to eat to live. So don't feel guilty about eating when you can't work out, whether you're sick or just unable to exercise. All right. If you guys would like to join me, the number again here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. Give me a call. Tell me what's on your mind and let's talk. Okay, here is another question from Lisa in Las Vegas. She says, I've heard you talk about the 7 words you shouldn't ever use, and I think should is one of them. You're right, Lisa. I've heard you talk about the 7 words you shouldn't ever use, but I can't find the show where you talked about that. Can you go over those again? Absolutely. Okay, so we've probably all heard the expression, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Absolutely not true. So not true. Broken bones actually can mend and be practically as good as new. Words can cause pain that never heals. Words can weigh heavily on you. Words can break you. And it's bad enough when someone else says something to you, something mean, something hurtful. That's horrible. It's bad enough when someone else says it. But what about what you say to yourself? How do you talk to yourself? So back in the, 60s or 70s, there was a comedian named George Carlin. And he talked about the 7 words you can't say on TV. And oh, how times have changed, because every single one of his seven words you can hear basically any day of the week on TV. Maybe not network TV, but Netflix for sure. Okay, so I decided to come up with the seven words that you should never say to yourself because they make you feel bad. And when you feel bad, you're more likely to eat for comfort. And when you take off the weight of the word, that's so corny, but I can't help it. When you take off the weight of the word, you're likely to feel better. And when you feel better, you're less likely to eat for comfort because you don't need comfort if you're already feeling okay. Or if you can make yourself feel okay with language. Okay, so the first word, and this is in alphabetical order, is butt, B-U-T, not the anatomical butt. I mean it as I get excellent grades, but that's just because I study hard. If I were really smart, I wouldn't have to do that. I feel good today, but that could change tomorrow. I ran my fastest mile, but other people are still faster than I am. This word, the B word, but, and the sentences that follow it usually undo any good feelings you have about yourself. So instead of cutting down on carbs and changing the way that you eat, try eliminating this word from your vocabulary. Go on a word diet. Get rid of the word but in this context. Then you're left with, I get excellent grades. I feel good today. Hey, I ran my fastest mile. And that feels a lot better, doesn't it? Now, next is can't. I can. That's a can is good. That brings to mind possibility, things that can happen, good things, positive things. But when your thoughts are on the lines of, I can do this. I can be happy. I can have a good life. I can get this job. I can meet someone wonderful. I can have a good and happy life. Hey, you feel good. And when you feel good, again, you are less likely to use food for comfort or distraction. But put a not on the end of can, or you make it a contraction, and then you have cannot or can't, a word that instantly makes you feel bad. Instantly. I can't eat that. I can't lose weight. I can't stay on my eating plan. I can't take care of myself. I can't do that. I can never meet anyone. Oh, horrible, depressing, completely bums you out, right? When you can't on yourself. So eliminate the word can't from your vocabulary, unless it's along the lines of, I can't be mean to myself because I don't deserve it. As Henry Ford once famously said, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. So believe in yourself. The next time you find yourself saying you can't do something, stop and ask yourself, is that true? Why not? Why can't you do something? If you ever read the children's book, The Little Engine That Could, think about that. It's about a little engine, like a little tiny engine that's asked to do something impossible. Little engine has to pull a whole train up the mountain. And the little engine had a mantra. And the little engine said, I think I can. I think I can. I think I can. I think I can. I can. I can. I can. And that train pulls the whole train up the mountain, and the train, which for some reason is anthropomorphized and is a boy, says, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I can, I can, and does it. And so against all odds, he does it. He does the impossible. And you can, too. You can, too. I'm getting a call. Hold on. I'm so into I think I can, I think I can. I did not even notice someone was trying to call me. Are you there?
Oh,
hello.
I'm here. Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Nicole. Did you hear the I didn't realize you could call in. Did you hear my show earlier about my, I answered your question about being sick?
I didn't. I actually just was able to get on now because I was in the middle of something, but I did hear the don't tell yourself you can't unless you are telling yourself I can't be mean to myself, and
yes.
I really like that.
Yes. I'm glad you do. So
yeah, no, I missed it. I missed the sick thing, but I can go back and listen to it later.
Absolutely.
Okay. I have another question, though. Can I ask?
Of course.
Okay, so it's kind of on the same realm. Maybe the answer to that might answer this, but it's kind of the same thing. Like I just started working a full-time job, and like it's exhausting because I'm just like I'm working and I'm still trying to socialize and date and work out, and there's just like so much that happens in one day, and I just find myself exhausted. So I'll come home at the end of the day, and even if I'm not like physically hungry because I'm so tired, I just like want to eat to feel better and to feel like energized and like to kind of comfort myself. And I just don't know how to avoid that. It happened again yesterday, and then like I woke up and now I like, well, I haven't had breakfast because I'm trying to like restrict my calories and make up for yesterday or last
Oh,
night. So I just don't
Nicole,
know what to do.
I got it. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I got to do this to you. I'm sorry. Don't skip breakfast to make up for calories because you know what happens when you do that?
What?
Your metabolism goes, oh, fewer calories are coming in. Let's slow down and grab every single one of those calories and become much more efficient. And then you end up needing fewer calories to get through the day. And that makes you gain weight more easily. Okay, so here's what I'm hearing. So, you know, start don't restrict. Restriction leads to actually gaining weight more easily in the long run. And I know you don't want that.
Okay. No, I don't.
So here's what I'm hearing, that when you're physically exhausted, and
Yes.
also you need, so not only are you physically exhausted, but you need something kind of something cozy and comfortable and something to make you physically feel better.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so if it so as we know, food does not wake you up when you're tired, right?
Right.
So what is it, like if you think about non-food related, something that makes you just feel cozy and comfy and relaxed, what comes to mind?
That's my bed. But food always sounds good before bed.
Well,
What else? Tea?
tea,
Tea's not
yes.
gonna do it. I don't know if tea will do it.
Well, maybe decaf tea if it's a night. But tea or but it's not just that. It's not just drinking tea. It's like getting into cozy clothes and putting a blanket around you and just sort of being cozy, doing something or even watching something on TV that makes you feel cozy. Like I know when I'm sick or something and I'm not totally sleeping, but I'm able to watch TV and I just want to feel cozy. I'll do something like watch old episodes of Friends just 'cause it makes me happy. It makes me cozy. Or When I Met Your Mother or How I Met Your Mother. So for me, that like it's the whole thing. It's watching something that makes you feel cozy, putting on comfortable clothes, maybe having something warm. Have some soup, you know, have something that just makes you feel like cozy and relaxed.
Gotcha. Okay, that's really good advice. I'm gonna try that. I mean, I didn't have anything super bad. It was like blueberries and like a date and but it was sugar right before bed. So I'll try tea, soup, cozy clothes, blanket, cozy show. That makes me feel comfortable and cozy.
Yeah, because think exactly, because think about what it is you really need. Like the next time you find yourself turning to food, say, what is it I really need? What am I wanting right now?
I needed rest and sleep.
Right. And if you're not ready to instantly go to bed, like if you get home from work and you're exhausted and it's a new job and you're still, hold on, I'm moving my camera, sorry. It's a new job and you're stressed out maybe and it's intense. You're not going to just come home from work and go to sleep, but you need to come home from work and maybe take a rest, just relax and give yourself a little buffer zone before you go to sleep.
That helps.
Yeah.
Thank you so
You
much.
are so welcome. Congratulations on your new job, and I'm glad you could find a way to call in.
Yes, I had to ask a question.
Well, it's just not the same without you calling in to ask questions. So I'm so glad you did.
Thanks, Dr. Nina.
You're so
Me
welcome.
Too.
Okay.
I'll go listen to the other answer now.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye. Oh, glad that she was able to call in. Okay. Where was I? Can't. Was I in can't? Yes, I was talking about the little engine. Okay, so I'm up to the next word, which is dumb. Now, there are variations of this word. Stupid, idiot, moron. You get the idea. As in, how could I ever lose weight if I eat cake? Or, I'm such an idiot, I can't believe I ate cake. Or, I can't believe I went on my diet, off my diet. I feel so stupid. Now think about it. Oh my gosh. Think about it. If a friend of yours said, oh, I can't believe I ate all those cookies, what would you say to your friend? Would you say, oh, what is with you? How could you be so dumb? How could you be so stupid? You're a moron. I don't think so. I don't think you would say that to your friend. You might say something like, hey, don't beat yourself up. Why do you think you ate those cookies? Or what's going on? Talk to me. Or, hey, it's not the worst thing that you've ever done. It's all right. But let's look at why. Or you'd talk to your friend. So there's a great quote. I love this quote. You've probably heard me say it before. It's by Marcia Hutchinson. She says, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. Let me repeat that because it is so important. If you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. Kind of says it all. So the next time you're beating yourself up for what you ate or didn't eat or how much you weigh or how you didn't exercise, all of that. Think about what would you say to a friend who had done exactly the same thing? Assuming, of course, you're nice to your friends, which I'm going to assume you're nice to your friends. So keep this in mind. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or to a child or to someone you love and care about, do not say it to yourself. Okay, next up is the word normal. Normal, the N word, I call it. Normal. People ask me all the time, is this normal? Am I normal? Is he normal? Is she normal? Is that normal? What the heck is normal? What the heck is normal? I don't know. Maybe it's just a setting on a laundry machine. That's pretty much the only normal I can think of. Because I have really no idea what normal is. I've heard about so-called normal people, but I have yet to meet one. And I include myself in that category. So, how do you define normal? How is normal defined? Okay, according to the dictionary, normal means conforming to a standard, usual, typical, or expected. Now, obviously, there are some standards of behavior and ethics in our society that are expected and typical, and behavior outside of that that isn't, quote unquote, normal. But I'm talking about a range of thoughts, emotions, beliefs, ideas, wishes, and so forth, that people question. They have a thought, they have a feeling. Am I normal to have this feeling? Yes, it is. You are normal. You are having a reaction to a situation that is normal. And so much of what we think has to do with the culture we live in and the people around us. For example, I know someone who was raised in an Orthodox religious community, and she questioned the interpretation of the Bible used in that community, which was like literally, this is the word of God. This is, she questioned it. And she said, well, can't we think about it more like a metaphor? Or can't we think of it as sort of a message, not as literal? And this was seen as very, very wrong and very abnormal. And people were not happy with her in that religious community. So she moved away. She found a different, less Orthodox community in which questioning was encouraged. And so in that new community, she was normal. She fit right in. So don't judge your thoughts, beliefs, needs, feelings as normal or abnormal. Think about what's right for you or wrong for you. Assuming that what's right for you doesn't hurt others, You know, let that be your guide. If you feel like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, it's not that there's something wrong with you. It's that you need to find a square hole. Next word, ridiculous. Ridiculous, as in don't be ridiculous. Ridiculous means deserving or inviting derision or mockery. Absurd. Of course, this very definition is suspect because what factors go into the determination of what's ridiculous, right? It's completely subjective, right? Now, often people are told they're ridiculous for what they're feeling. Like, I feel sad about this thing that happened. Oh, don't be ridiculous. You shouldn't feel that way. Which, by the way, combines two of my words on the do not say list. Someone I know once told her father that she liked a movie that he had seen and he disliked. And he told her, don't be ridiculous. There's no way you could like that movie. I didn't like that movie. How could you like it? That's ridiculous. Okay, so that's an extreme example, and it's a little, you know, narcissism much on the part of the father. Yes, indeed. But she's told that how she felt was ridiculous. How you feel is never ridiculous. You got to take what you feel and honor it. What you feel is important. If you're expressing how you think or what you feel, how is that ever ridiculous? It is not. It is not. And Lisa, you were right. Should is indeed on my list. Should. So how many times have you told yourself, I should not do that. I shouldn't have eaten that. I shouldn't eat that. I shouldn't want that. I should be better at this. I should get a better job. I should have a boyfriend by now. I should have a girlfriend by now. I should be married by now. I should have kids by now. And often we speak to ourselves in the second person as if someone is talking to us. Right? Like, you know, you shouldn't have eaten that, you tell yourself. You shouldn't have done that, you tell yourself. You shouldn't want that. You should do better. You should be better. Oh, here's my personal favorite. Personal favorite. And yes, I'm being very sardonic and sarcastic. Here's the one I hate the most. You should have known better. You should have known better. As in, somehow you should be psychic and you have failed at that, so you're going to get shamed by yourself. For not being psychic, really? You should have known better? How should you have known better? Where's your crystal ball? Now, if you talk to yourself in the second person, ask yourself, whose voice does that sound like? Is it familiar? We often talk to ourselves the way we're talked to by others. And the word should causes us to direct anxiety, sadness, anger, and distress towards ourselves. And these feelings can be so powerful that we end up coping with food, escaping our own mean voice with food. So instead of the I shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that, however you say it, ask yourself, well, what do I want? What am I feeling? What's going on with me right now? Be curious, not critical. And you know, then when you ask yourself, just as I told Nicole earlier, what is it she really wanted and needed when she got home from an exhausting day at work and a new job? She needed to relax. She needed to feel comfortable and cozy. She needed some kind of, recharging, relaxing experience. And when you can identify what it is that you're really needing, you're really wanting, instead of using food for that purpose, you can meet it in the way that it really will fulfill you. So asking yourself questions and being curious, not critical, is vital. So be interested in your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, instead of being judgmental, because when you're curious, not critical, you are going to feel better about yourself. Okay, next word. Try. If you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying not to binge, if you're trying to stay healthy, if you're trying to eat healthy, if you're trying to date, trying to write a script, trying to find the courage to leave your spouse, trying to find the courage to leave your job, then you're stuck, right? Because trying, hold on. I'm getting so, hi there, you're on with Dr. Nina.
Yeah, Dr. Nina, this is Larry. How are you doing this sunny Wednesday?
Larry from Burbank. Good to hear from you. How are you? I'm well.
Yes. Doing okay. Hearing you talk, I don't know why I thought of this, but it sort of came to my mind, so I thought I'd call in. One of my New Year's attempts, or New Year's, I'll say the R word, resolutions. You're probably not thrilled with that. It's very simple, to drink more water. My understanding is that most of us run around during our busy days dehydrated, and I know I am. And my desire to consume my favorite poison, which is soft drinks, especially the stuff with caffeine, has been greatly reduced by drinking enough water, really hammering on it. And I've heard that the physical A feeling of hunger can be alleviated or eliminated also by drinking more water. We're 70% water, so I just thought I'd toss that out there.
Yes, first of all, I have nothing against resolutions as long as they're good resolutions and doable resolutions and resolutions that are in the service of actually making you feel better. It's not that when you're, and I think it's great, but just one thing. It's not that when you are hungry, you can drink water to alleviate hunger. It's that often people who are thirsty mistake thirst for hunger.
Right.
So that then when you drink water because you're really thirsty, you're actually meeting your need. I've talked about how when food becomes the go-to for everything, you start to not recognize what you're really needing, especially if when you're a baby, every time you're thirsty, you're fed. Every time you're hungry, you're fed. Every time you're sad, you're fed. You learn that food is the answer to everything. So you bring up a very
Right.
good and valuable point that yes, are you, are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Are you hungry in your body or in your heart?
Exactly. I know it's not in line with the psychodynamic aspects you talk about, which are so true, but it's a tool that has no downside, the water. And last night I had dinner and I had a Pepsi. And am I beating myself up? No, it's the first one in like a week, and I'm okay with it. And you always say, progress, not progress, not
Practice
perfection,
makes
but
progress. Practice makes progress.
exactly. It's a turn on the ridiculous cliche. And this is the case. If I have another one tonight, it's not like I'm mainlining with it. I'm not going to, but I'm okay either way.
Yeah, I think that, and first of all, yes, I talk about psychodynamic, psychoanalytic principles, but I also talk about practical things. Earlier, just about, how many calories you actually need just to keep your body going and just to stay alive every day. You need a lot of calories, and a lot of people think they've got to earn all their calories. So, yeah, I really appreciate what you're saying. And just one caveat for you and Pepsi, which is that remember, the anticipation of deprivation makes you want it more. So,
Right. And that's
giving.
why I freely admit I am okay when I do that. It's not like, oh my God, I had a sip. The 12-step perfection versus failure mindset, that's a recipe, pardon the pun, for disaster.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah,
Okay.
so I'm glad. So what you're talking about is balance. And eventually your body will you will crave water rather than Pepsi. That the more that you also practice intuitive eating and you think about not about, oh, I can't have that, so I want it, or I'm trying to eat clean, so I won't have that and that. Eventually, when you give yourself permission to have whatever you want and you take away that anticipation of deprivation, whether it's Pepsi or cake, it doesn't taste good to you anymore because now you want to treat your body well. You want what's good for you, not just what tastes good.
Right. I know as you're talking, I'm thinking about sports psychology. And say for golf, if you want to visualize, and I had a class in visualization in college, that class, sports psychology, you visualize hitting the ball straight and perfect. You don't say, I'm not going to hook the ball, I'm not going to miss the tee. it's a positive mindset. And in the same way, if I'm thinking I better not eat that, I guess the unconscious says, there's that junk, you know? Yes.
Yes, have that thing that you can't have. But if you say, I'm going to feel better if I drink water, I like how I feel drinking water, and I don't like how I feel so much drinking Pepsi, then eventually you're going to choose water every time because you're choosing to feel good.
Exactly. And to add to that, I heard that front loading, quote unquote, with water is a great idea. First thing out of bed now, I stagger half asleep to the sink, and I have a water filter there. I down at least one full, 16-ounce glass. And it's like the cells are saying, yeah, yay, we like Larry. And I get on with my day.
Well, hopefully Larry can like Larry too. Not just your cells. Yeah, that's good. It sounds like you're taking action and you're taking steps to be more nurturing to yourself. And that's good.
Okay.
One thing just made me think of it. I once told someone who she had a baby and she couldn't stop eating just crap. And I just said, would you feed that to your baby? And she said, oh my God, no, never. It's horrible. It's full of chemicals. It's terrible. It's got no nutritional value whatsoever. I would never do that. And I said, then why are you not as good as that baby? Why are you not as, how come it's okay for you, but not for your baby? So you have to think about yourself as an innocent, wonderful baby who needs to be nurtured.
And, you don't have to have a baby. I think about my innocent, wonderful car. I never put sulfuric acid in because it's bad for the car, but I think my life is just a little more important than my car, so maybe it wouldn't kill me to be consistent, right?
It might even do you a lot of good to treat yourself as well as you treat your car. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So
all right.
You don't have to, as you said, you don't have to have a baby to get the analogy, but most people have a car or they have something that they have to take care of. And ask yourself, are you taking care of yourself as well as you're taking care of that person or that thing?
Or that, or your wardrobe, or, my mountaineering gear or whatever, I got to be consistent. So, and that applies certainly a heck of a lot more than water.
Well, it sounds like you're off to a great start this year, and it's really good to hear from you, and I'm happy to hear that you are in that stance of taking care of yourself, because eating issues are self-abandonment, and we are in service of, we're here to create self-care, and when you do that consistently, all this stuff with food just goes away.
And it could be sort of a singular touchstone toward, as you say, expanding that to other areas, that this is successful, I actually enjoy it, not doing this other bad thing that's a substitute. And maybe I can do that with something else and get the little snowball rolling, even though we're getting towards spring. Well, a couple of months.
It's snowing somewhere. There's always the Arctic.
The Himalayas. Okay. Okay. Good.
Oh, well, good luck with this and keep me posted. Let me know how it goes. And any of your other thoughts or epiphanies, I welcome to hear them.
I don't know how much time you have, but you might have, I shift gears, or is it sort of winding down?
No, I have almost 7 minutes.
Okay. Radical shift gears. I may have shared on an earlier program an incident that happened at work way back in March and how I've been actually unable to let it go. So without going into details, can you explain, and it's obvious, but the mechanism behind the fact that my inability or refusal to let the resentment and hatred go impedes my search for another job?
Okay, so as I recall, you were at your workplace. Someone treated you very badly, shoved you, and in you defending yourself, you were then cast as, you were reprimanded, and that person kind of got mm-hmm. away with things. So is that?
No, I mean, yes and no. I was assaulted by a library patron when I was working there.
Right.
And because I went outside to get his ID, he hit me several more times. And the library gave him a 30-day suspension despite being charged with misdemeanor battery. And then the lying for management that came from that, I haven't been able to let it go. And I actually have a bullet chambered in my gun, as it were, a fax-filled letter with supporting emails, very meticulous, irrefutable, that I want to send to the one person behind this and CC the city manager, CC the main city attorney, and CC all library staff, and send that when I'm on my way out. Okay. I won't send that now. That's suicide. But even the fact that I have that chambered is impeding my job search. I know that.
Right. And just to clarify, this is a symbolic gun and a symbolic bullet. Okay.
Yes.
Here are my thoughts. That when we are at the workplace is a stand-in for our original families of origin. So that mm-hmm. bosses can resonate like parents, coworkers can resonate as siblings. And if there's anything that happens that might be familiar, being treated, you know, being punished for something that you haven't done wrong, being treated badly and having that person get away with the bad treatment, you know, whatever thematically happened at the library is likely something that hurts, that sort of reopens the wounds of the past. So mm-hmm. that you're not just dealing with this situation, yeah. you're dealing with supervisors and bosses, aka parents, who didn't protect you, who took someone else's side, who didn't whatever, and that is familiar, and that's why it's hard to let go, because it's not just about what happened at the library.
Right. It's just a repeat. And if I'd had a little more protection, and if I was actually heard, if I was actually loved, which it was so highly conditional, then I could say, hey, this sucks. I'd let it go and then find another job forthwith. But it's almost like the repetition compulsion that I'm hanging on to that unfairness 50 years ago.
It is because unlike 50 years ago, now there's something you can ostensibly do, which is send this letter or do something or take a stance, even though it's just as sort of hopeless as it was before. So, yes, you're stuck. Mm-hmm. You're stuck in the past. The key is to recognize the repetition compulsion, as you said, absolutely, mm-hmm. and to deal with that original situation so that this situation in the present doesn't have you stuck.
Right. Understood. And it's beyond mere understanding. It's deeper than that. And, you know, but understanding it as well is still helpful to remind myself that.
It has to be processed. It's not just you're cognitively saying, oh, this is like then. It's saying, wow, this is like then. That was painful. I need to get in touch with and process and work through what happened before. And, mm-hmm. And so that I can get myself out of this emotional quicksand now.
Yeah, and this is sort of back. I know where your time is the end is near here. I did not, and I cannot nail my dad vengeance since he's gone, but I can nail them in some capacity, you know. So that kind of fueled the fire, but. Breathing and getting past that is the best way to go, and understanding it, like you say, and processing it.
Yes. Because even if you do send that letter and you have some kind of vengeance, it's not going to heal the past, and it's not going to be satisfying, as you think.
I think it'll help. Just nail them and move on, but I will not do that until I have another opportunity.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Sounds like you're very reflective. Larry, I do have to go. Call me next week and let me know how you're doing. We could talk more about this.
Okay, I shall do that.
Okay. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. And if you like the show, please take a moment to write a review on iTunes. You can find it under the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on iTunes Podcasts. Thank you so much, and I will see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.